The retreat of Guthrie's men was no trick. The rest of the night passed quietly, as did the next 2 days and nights after that. On the morning of the fourth day, the kid walked up to Guthrie.
Looks like Neble and the rest of your bunch have decided you're not worth fighting for.
Guthrie glared at the kid. They had taken pity on him and given him coffee and something to eat every day, but it hadn't improved his disposition any.
They're just biding their time. They won't let me die, and they sure as hell won't let me be turned over to the law. I know too much about too many of those boys. They won't want me testifying.
Sounds like a good reason for them to decide they're better off with you dead.
Oh. I hadn't thought about that.
Max, guard.
Max planted himself on his haunches in front of Guthrie and gazed intently at the prisoner. Lace inclined her head toward the other side of the rock as an indication that she wanted the kid to follow her. He did so with his Winchester tucked under his arm. His gaze roved constantly over both canyon rims and the gate. Just because Guthrie's hired killers hadn't tried anything for a couple of days didn't mean the trouble was over.
What is it?
He and Lace put the big rock between them and the prisoner.
The old-timer's liable to be back today.
I know. If nothing happened to delay him, and if he was able to get the authorities in Phoenix to listen to him.
If he was able to use your name to make them listen, that's what you mean.
Influence isn't worth having if you're not willing to use it in a good cause.
You see, that's not the sort of thing I'd expect to hear a hunted fugitive say. If that wild yarn of yours is true, and you really are this rich fella Conrad Browning, I think it's time you told me how you went from that to being the man you are now. What's this Kid Morgan business all about, anyway?
That's sort of personal.
Damn right it is. You think those things I told you about my life weren't personal? You think it was easy to tell you my mama was a whore, I was a whore, and I'm gonna make damn sure my daughter doesn't grow up to be a whore? Because I tell you right now, kid, it wasn't. It wasn't easy at all.
He didn't know what to say to that. She was right, of course. She had been honest with him. Did he owe her the same sort of honesty? They were comrades in arms, after all. They had fought side by side, risked their lives for each other, heard the same bullets whipping past their heads.
If we get out of this mess with Guthrie alive, we'll be heading on to Santa Fe pretty soon. Will we be going there as partners to clear your name? Or do I have to take you prisoner again and turn you in for that 10 grand bounty?
Do you think you could?
For $10,000? I'd give it a damn good try.
All right. If you want to know the ugly story of Kid Morgan's birth, then so be it. You may not like everything you hear.
Try me. It's not likely you'll be able to shock me.
I'm not trying to shock you. I'm just doing what you asked, telling you the truth.
For the next half hour, that's what he did, speaking quietly so Guthrie couldn't overhear. It was bad enough opening himself up to Lace without letting the evil little rancher in on it. She tried to keep her face expressionless at first, but as the tale unfolded of Rebel's murder, the injuries he had suffered, and the stark, unrelenting vengeance he had exacted on those responsible for the tragedy, he saw both shock and pity in her eyes. The shock didn't bother him so much. He didn't want any part of the pity.
If you're feeling sorry for me, forget it. There's no need.
But it was so unfair.
It was life. You want to know the biggest truth I ever learned? Anything can happen to anybody at any time. People won't admit that to themselves or even think about it too much, because if they did, it would drive them mad. But it's still true. You go along and you think you've got a good life and it can be snatched away from you in a second with no warning at all. Everything you've ever worked for can disappear, just like that. And it doesn't do a damn bit of good to talk about fair or unfair, it just is. You're going to mourn what you've lost or the bad breaks that have happened to you, you might as well mourn the sun coming up in the morning because it's all part of the same thing.
She stared at him as he finished his bleak pronouncement. He had put into words the feelings that had ridden with him over the past year. He had never really been alone, no matter what he thought. The stark horror of life had always been at his side.
Don't you think that sometimes people can get good breaks too?
Sure, that's part of it. There are probably some people who go through life without anything bad ever happening to them. But it's not because of anything they did. It's just the luck of the draw. They might go along just fine for 50 years and then lose it all. Or they might go to their grave still thinking the world's a wonderful place. It doesn't change anything.
I feel sorry for you, whether you want it or not, Conrad.
You believe me now?
Yeah. Nobody could spin some crazy yarn like that without it being true. And don't worry. I'll try to help you clear your name, but I won't waste any pity on you from here on out. You're already getting plenty of that from yourself.
You think I feel sorry for myself?
Damn right you feel sorry for yourself. You had every right to for a while. The way you've helped people out along the way, despite how you felt. Well, I can admire you for that, but for God's sake, you can't let what happened ruin your life. You can't just shut yourself off from everything that's good out there.
Why the hell not?
Because Rebel wouldn't want you to. You talk about the truth. The truth is somewhere in the middle. You're not just Conrad Browning or Kid Morgan. You're both of them. And that adds up to a good man, whether you believe it or not. That's why I'm going to help you, Kid.
I thought you were going to call me Conrad.
I like Kid a little better. But it doesn't really matter.
No, I suppose it doesn't.
He took hold of her arms and drew her toward him. His mouth found hers as her arms went around his neck. The parts of his being that had been locked in mortal combat with each other could take up their struggle again later. The rest of him was going to be busy for a while. They were sitting at the base of one of the pine trees near the canyon mouth. The kid's arm was around Lace's shoulders, and her head rested against his arm. She wore her poncho again, but her hat hung by its neck strap.
It's a good thing Nebble and the rest of that bunch of gun wolves didn't come along a little while ago.
Yeah, but I was keeping an eye and an ear out for them.
Sure you were.
The afternoon was still and quiet, so he didn't have any trouble hearing the horses in the distance. From the way Lace suddenly stiffened against him, the kid knew she had heard them too.
Sounds like a big bunch of riders.
Yeah, and they're coming closer.
Maybe it's the old man and a posse from Phoenix.
It could be.
The kid got to his feet and helped her up.
But we'd better make sure.
Carrying their rifles, they hurried toward the canyon mouth and stopped at the gate. As the kid peered through the screen of brush, he spotted a cloud of dust in the distance to the east. Not to the south, as it likely would have been if it heralded the return of Chester Blunt.
That doesn't look good.
No, not at all. It appears that Nebel and some of the rest of Guthrie's crew are paying us a visit again.
But not all of the gunmen, the kid saw as the riders came closer, and he began to be able to make them out. There were about a dozen men in all. 6-1 odds, he thought. He had faced worse. But as the grim side of his nature knew all too well, good luck always ran out.
Check the rims.
She stepped back and lifted her head to let her gaze search along both sides of the canyon.
Nothing. Nobody's moving around up there.
Well, that's something to be thankful for anyway. Maybe the rest of Guthrie's men gave up and left after their last try. Those could be the only ones he has left.
That's still pretty long odds against us.
Yeah, but as long as they're out there and we're in here, we can hold them off.
I hope you're right.
Lace bent over to look through a gap in the brush again.
Son of a bitch!
What is it? What's wrong?
Those aren't all Guthrie's men. Look at those two hombres riding in front. Do you recognize the one on the right?
Good lord, that's...
Yep, Pronto Pike. And all the rest of his men are with him too.
I thought we gave Pike the slip days ago. How did he manage to find us?
Back when I was riding with him, sometimes I thought he could smell the men we were after, even from miles away. It was uncanny the way he could find them. Sort of spooky, too.
Some predators have a nose for blood. Maybe that extends to blood money, too.
Could be. However he did it, he's here. And here he comes.
Most of the men had reined to a halt a couple of hundred yards away from the canyon mouth. Pike, and the man with him, kept riding until they were only 50 yards away. Then they stopped as well. The kid wondered if the man with Pike was Nebel, the chief of Guthrie's hard cases. It wouldn't surprise him if that were true.
Morgan! Morgan! Is that you in there?
Don't answer him. If he knows for sure it's you, he'll never give up.
I don't think he's going to, anyway.
Hello, the canyon! I know good and well somebody's in there. Nebel here tells me that one of you is a woman. Lace, if that's you, come on out! Bring Morgan with you, and we'll partner up again, honey. I know you deserted me, but I'm willing to forgive you for that. All you've got to do is turn Morgan over to me. You don't really think you can claim that 10 grand all to yourself now, do you? Better to get a nice share you can send to that little gal of yours back in Kansas City. That'll help keep her from growing up to be a whore, like her ma and her grandma.
Lace thrust the barrel of her rifle through the brushy screen.
That dirty son of a... I told him to never talk about my daughter.
Lace, no!
But before he could reach over to grab the rifle, she had squeezed the trigger. Anger caused her to miss the shot. The bullet kicked up dust a few yards to Pike's left. He and Nebel wheeled their horses and dashed back to join the other men. Lace glanced over at the kid and saw the frown on his face.
What?
Pike knows for sure it's us in here now. That's why he was trying to goad you into shooting at him. He must have suspected it, but you just confirmed it for him.
Damn it, he's not that tricky. Well, maybe he is.
Pike figured out we were behind him somewhere instead of ahead of him, so he doubled back to look for us. He probably decided we were trying to circle around him, so he cut south, too. When he got to the Rafter G, he heard about how a man and a woman were forded up in this canyon holding Guthrie hostage. Thought it might be us. For all I know, that Chinese cook got a good enough look at me to tell Pike what the man who grabbed Guthrie looked like. And Pike recognized the description.
How does that bring me into it? Pike didn't know I'd captured you.
No, but when the two of you split up, he could have figured that you'd still be trying to find me. It's all hunches and guesswork, but it could have happened that way. And the important thing is that Pike's out there, and he knows we're in here.
What happened to the rest of Guthrie's men?
I don't know. They gave up and rode away to find some other job? Hired guns like that are only loyal as long as they're getting paid. If they figured Guthrie wasn't going to make it out of this mess, they might have decided to cut their losses and move on.
Leaving Nebel and a handful of men to team up with Pike and his bunch. It sure could have happened that way, kid. What are we gonna do now?
The same thing we've been doing. Stay alert and wait for Blount to get back from Phoenix with a posse. Situation hasn't really changed that much.
An ugly suspicion was roaming around in the back of the kid's head, though. The situation had changed, and it might make all the difference in the world. Nebel and the remaining men from Guthrie's crew of gunfighters knew about the $10,000 reward for the kid. Pike had mentioned it when he was shouting at the canyon a few minutes earlier, so it couldn't be a secret. If Pike had promised them a share of the 10 grand, they might not care anymore about Spud Guthrie's safety. They might have decided it would be better to take what they could get, and Guthrie be damned. In that case, the rancher was now worthless as a hostage. Pike, Nebel, and the other men could attack the canyon without any thought for Guthrie's continued existence.
Come on, we need to fall back.
What about defending the canyon mouth?
We can't stop them from getting through here if they want to badly enough. If they attack us head-on, we'll kill some of them. But that'll just leave more money for the survivors to split up once we're dead. We'll fall back to the other end of the canyon and make our stand there.
We'd have all of them in front of us that way. We wouldn't have to worry about some of them getting up on the canyon rims and getting behind us.
That's what I was thinking.
The kid turned and headed toward the campsite. Lace followed alongside him. They came around the big rock and saw Guthrie looking confused.
What the hell was all the yelling about?
Looks like most of your boys have headed for the tall and uncut.
Lace bent to cut the ropes around his ankles. The kid grasped his arm and hauled him to his feet.
Nebel and the few others who are left have thrown in with a bounty hunter named Pronto Pike.
That's loco. My men would never betray me.
Looks like you're wrong about that. I'd say they don't give a damn anymore whether you live or die, Guthrie.
They gathered up their gear in a hurry and loaded it on the buckskin and the black.
Max, go watch the gate.
The dog bounded off to follow the order.
Where are we going? What are we gonna do?
Since when are we partners, you little snake? It'd be a whole hell of a lot simpler if we just shot you in the head right now.
The kid took hold of Guthrie's arm again. A shove sent him stumbling toward the far end of the canyon.
Get moving!
They led the horses as Guthrie stumbled along awkwardly in front of them.
Max! Come!
The dog came racing back and joined them. The canyon twisted and turned as it penetrated for half a mile into the Mogollon Rim. As the far end came in sight, the kid saw a steep, rocky wall seamed with fissures. Those cracks had been created in ages past by slabs of rock splitting off from the cliff face and toppling to the floor of the canyon. The slabs were heaped up in grotesque formations.
We'll ford up in there. The rocks will give us some cover.
They can still try to starve us out.
You think Pike will have the patience for a siege?
Well, maybe not. Especially as much as he hates the two of us.
You didn't give some thought to taking him up on his offer?
What offer? He was lying. If I'd have gotten the drop on you and turned you over to him, he'd have cut my throat in a second and then put a bullet in your head. Unless he decided to keep us both alive and have some fun with us first. It would have been fun for him, not us.
They led the horses as deep into the jumble of rocks as they could. The kid put Guthrie in a little alcove formed by a couple of the stone slabs.
You'll be as safe from flying lead here as anywhere, I suppose.
If you let me go, I'll call off Nebel and the rest of my men. We'll go back to the Rafter G. I don't care about this damned canyon anymore. That way you'll only have to deal with those bounty hunters.
Shut up!
The kid went to find a good place to make his stand. Lace was already lying on one of the tilted slabs of rock with her rifle thrust over the top of it.
This was a good idea, kid. We can see a couple of hundred yards down the canyon, and we got a good view of the rims, too.
Yeah, but there are enough trees and rocks that they'll have some cover, too. It'll be a good fight.
You got anything better to do today?
As a matter of fact, I do. It'll have to wait.
time stretched out. As the sun rose higher, the temperature in the canyon rose as well. The kid wondered if Pike was waiting to attack in order to make their nerves draw tighter.
Hey, kid.
Yeah?
Let's say you get out of this alive and are able to get those charges against you dropped.
That's being a little optimistic under the circumstances, don't you think?
Yeah, maybe. But let's say that's what happens.
All right.
What are you going to do then?
What I've been doing, I suppose.
You mean just drifting around, calling yourself Kid Morgan? Being a saddle tramp and a gunfighter?
What's wrong with that?
It's not who you are.
You've known me for less than 2 weeks. How do you know who I am?
We fought side by side and against each other, remember? You get to know somebody in a hurry when you're mixed up in something like that. You told me about the man you used to be.
You think I could go back to that? To being Conrad Browning? To sitting in an office and worrying about whether I was going to make as much money this month as I made last month? I don't think so.
Well, maybe not. But you can't keep on pretending to be somebody you're not. You just made up Kid Morgan. Hell, you came up with the name because it sounded like something out of a dime novel. You told me that yourself.
I needed the men I was after to believe that Conrad Browning was dead. That gave me an edge when I tracked them down.
But that's over. It's been over for a year. When you were done with it, why'd you keep on being Kid Morgan?
I couldn't. Couldn't.
Couldn't face life as Conrad without Rebel?
His eyes stung, probably because the sun was directly overhead and beating down into the canyon.
Time and again, you've ridden right into trouble. Why'd you do that?
Because Rebel would have wanted me to help those people, like Mr. Blount.
You mean because she would have wanted Conrad to help them? Rebel never knew Kid Morgan, but she loved Conrad Browning.
He saw a flicker of movement as a man darted around the nearest bend of the canyon and threw himself behind a tree. The kid whipped his rifle to his shoulder and fired, but he was a split second too late. A heartbeat later, the man opened fire, and slugs careened off the rocks around the kid and Lace, forcing them to duck. In that moment, more of the enemy raced around the bend and flung themselves behind cover. Shots began to ring out from behind other trees and rocks. The kid and Lace risked returning the fire, and as they did so, the kid saw puffs of powder smoke from several locations. It was a simple but effective strategy. Pike, Neville, and the other killers would work their way forward in the canyon, taking turns giving each other cover fire. They would lose some men along the way, but they would reach the rocks where the kid and Lace had taken cover. Their only chance was to kill as many of the attackers as possible before the final assault, so the odds wouldn't be too overwhelming. Even if they were able to do that, the likelihood of the kid and Lace surviving was slim. The ball had started, and all they could do was dance to the tune. The kid snugged the butt of the Winchester against his shoulder and waited for a target. A second later, as shots roared and bullets sizzled through the air and whined off the rocks, one of the men darted into view, trying to make it from one tree to another that was about 10 feet closer. The kid put a .44-40 round into his chest. It spun him off his feet and dropped him in a limp heap on the canyon floor. One down. But a fresh volley from the attacker forced him to duck his head and pull the rifle back. When he risked a look again, they were a few feet closer. Lace's rifle cracked twice. The kid saw a man pulling himself back behind a rock, dragging a bullet-shattered leg. That one might not be out of the fight completely, but at least he couldn't charge them. Call it 1.5.
What are you killed here, dammit? The way these slugs are bouncing around, a man shouldn't die with his hands tied behind his back.
Yeah, I might worry about that if you were a man instead of a snake. You know, I'm starting to see your point, kid. Conrad Browning wouldn't know what to do in a little dust-up like this, would he?
Probably not.
The kid saw a flash of a man's shirt and pulled the trigger. The bit of color disappeared, and he didn't know if he'd hit the man or not. The air inside the canyon was thick with smoke. The kid ignored the way the stuff stung his eyes, and the reek of it filled his nose. He blinked rapidly to clear his vision, and a bullet hit off the rock beside him. That shot had come from higher up. He jerked his head back and lifted his gaze to the canyon rim. The rifleman up there was on the move, trying to reach a spot where he would have a better angle at the defenders. He should have been more patient and waited until he was there before attempting a shot. The kid took aim with his Winchester. That was enough to throw him off stride. He lost his balance and lurched toward the rim. Too close to the edge, he toppled over the brink, pinwheeling through the air for several hundred feet before he crashed into some rocks at the bottom with a bright crimson splash of blood. 2.5 men out of the fight, the kid thought. They were whittling down the odds, but not fast enough. The rest of the attackers were only 50 yards away. The kid looked over at McCall in alarm.
Are you hit?
She waved to show that she was all right. She pulled the poncho up and showed him a bloody patch on the right sleeve of her faded men's shirt, about halfway between the elbow and shoulder. A From the looks of it, a bullet had grazed her.
Hurts like hell, but I could still use the arm, so nothing's broken.
He nodded and turned his attention back to the attacker. One of them burst out from behind a tree and tried to cover his advance by emptying a six-shooter as fast as he could. But the kid and Lace fired at the same time, and both bullets ripped through the man and flung him off his feet. 3.5. 4, if you counted the man with the busted leg who'd been left behind. That still left 8 cold-blooded killers who were almost within spitting distance of the rocks. Pretty soon, it was going to be close-quarters gun work. The kid drew his Colt and slid a cartridge into the usually empty 6th chamber in the cylinder. He was going to need a full wheel. He set the gun beside him on the rock where he could reach it easily. He did the same with the pearl-handled Colt he had taken from Pike back in Las Vegas on that night that seemed like ages ago.
Hold your fire! Hold your fire! Lace, if you're still alive, listen to me. Lace, you don't have to die. Shoot Morgan right now. End this. If you don't, you'll never see your daughter again.
Damn you, Pike! Keep your dirty tongue off my little girl! Don't you talk about her, you son of a bitch!
I'm just trying to help you here, Lace. You and me, we go back a long way.
Too far. You think I believe you? I know you'll kill me just as soon as you get the chance, Pike. You're loco, and you always have been.
Is that your last word?
Go to hell, Pike!
Take him.
A storm of lead broke over the rocks where she and the kid were crouched. The kid rose up on his knees, knowing that the time for sharpshooting was over. It was going to be bloody slaughter, and devil take the hindmost. He brought the rifle to his shoulder and swung the barrel from left to right. He was throwing lead and hoping it landed in the bodies of his enemies. The Winchester's hammer clicked on empty. He flung the rifle aside and snatched up the 2 revolvers as he rose to his feet. The gun bucked in his hand. From the corner of his eye, he saw Lace doing the same. Guns filled both her hands as she fired left, right, left, right. The kid couldn't see much through the clouds of gun smoke swirling around him, but he caught glimpses of men falling and blood welling from bullet-torn flesh. Then what felt like a blow from a giant hammer knocked his left leg out from under him, and he rolled out of control down the slab of rock. He stopped at the hard ground at the base of the rock and landed on his belly. He'd managed to hold on to both guns and tried to scramble to his feet, but his leg folded up underneath him and dumped him on his belly again. Crawling forward, guns up, pushing with his good leg, he dragged himself along with his elbows. 2 men ran past the rock.
Hey!
They wheeled toward him, their Colts swinging into line. The kid's guns roared first. The kid rolled against the rock and braced his shoulders on it. He got his good leg under him and shoved, sliding up the rock until he was in a roughly upright position, balanced on his right leg. He couldn't see Lace. Smoke and dust clogged the air and half blinded him. The gunfire had stopped. A red haze filled the kid's vision. As he tried to blink it away, he realized that blood was dripping into his eyes from a cut on his forehead. Out of that gory haze, a dark figure loomed.
Lace!
Afraid not, Morgan.
Clad in black and red, Pronto Pike looked like Satan himself stepping out of the fires of hell.
Lace is dead, and you're about to be.
The kid lifted his guns and squeezed the triggers. The hammers fell on empty chambers. Pike lifted his Colt and took deliberate aim at the kid's head. But before he could pull the trigger, a shape knocked into his arm, causing the bullet to hit the rock several feet away. Lace wrapped her arm around Pike's neck and drove him forward. They fell, and Pike's gun hand struck a rock, jarring the revolver out of his grip. It skittered away. The 2 of them rolled over, wrestling desperately. The kid saw that Lace's poncho was gone, and her shirt was covered with blood. Somehow, she clung to life, even though she'd been riddled with bullets. The kid hobbled toward the gun Pike had dropped, forcing his wounded leg to hold him up. Ignoring the hot flood of blood down it, he focused all his attention on the gun. Lace was too weak to put up much of a fight. Pike threw her off and punched her on the jaw. The kid reached for the gun and picked it up.
Where's my gun? I can't wait to shoot you dead.
Pike!
What?
The kid's shot blew Pike backward off Lace. The spray of blood and brains that exploded out the back of Pike's head settled on the rock like droplets of crimson rain. The bounty hunter lay on his back, staring sightlessly at the sky, with the bullet hole in the center of his forehead looking like a 3rd red-rimmed eye. The kid dropped the gun. His strength and his balance deserted him at last. He fell beside Lace, close enough that he could stretch out his arm and put it around her. He pulled himself closer to her.
Lace! Lace, can you hear me?
Kid?
Don't you die. Damn it, don't you die. You got a little girl waiting for you to come home to her.
Conrade. Conrade, you gotta promise me. You'll see that she's taken care of.
You'll take care of her.
You got to promise me.
I promise. I give you my word.
You're a good man, Conrade. And so's the kid.
No.
He pulled her even closer.
No!
5 minutes later, the kid was still holding her limp form when Chester Blunt, the posse of sheriff's deputies, and the U.S. Marshals from Phoenix found him. An hour later, one of the marshals, who had plenty of experience at patching up wounds, wrapped a bandage around the bullet hole in Conrad's thigh. He had cleaned the wound with a liberal application of whiskey and proclaimed that Conrad would live. Probably.
I figure the Alamo must have looked like that, or a little bighorn. Bodies a-laying everywhere and the ground awash with blood. Lord, what a battle that must have been.
It was bad enough.
Conrad looked toward the blanket-covered form lying under a pine tree nearby, with the big dog sitting beside her. The marshal had spent most of his time trying to save Lace.
Were they all dead?
Dead as could be. Except for Guthrie, and I ain't sure he's ever gonna be the same. He's plumb loco.
The members of the posse had found Spud Guthrie still in the little space between the rocks where the kid had put him. Chips in the stone and splashes of color showed where numerous bullets had struck the rocks. Guthrie himself, however, was untouched. But sitting there helplessly, as hot lead flew around him for minutes that must have seemed like hours, had done something to his mind. So far, all he had done was stare straight ahead, wide-eyed, and hadn't made a sound. The kid thought Guthrie had gone mad and might never recover. He wondered if it was a fitting punishment for a man whose pride and arrogance had set so much killing in motion. But he was no longer in the business of punishing anyone, so it was none of his affair, he told himself. The marshal finished tying off the bandage around his leg.
There you go, Mr. Browning. You'll be able to walk on it a little, but I wouldn't go running around if I was you. It'll heal a lot better and a lot quicker if you'll stay off it as much as you can.
You're welcome to stay here for a while. I ain't got a cabin no more, but I can pitch a couple of tents here in the canyon. We'll be mighty comfortable. Fresh air will do you good, I'm thinking.
I'm obliged for that, Mr. Blount. I may just take you up on it.
Blunt glanced toward the figure under the pine tree.
I kind of had a hunch you might.
I hope you'll stop by Phoenix when you're well enough to travel and say hello to the governor. The way he set the telegraph wires to burning when he heard you were in trouble tells me he sets a lot of store by you, Mr. Browning. He had the county sheriff and the chief marshal in Denver hopping, trying to get help for you.
If you see him, tell him how grateful I am. But yes, I'll be sure and tell him myself, too.
None of the lawmen who had galloped back to Dos Caballos Canyon with Blunt had any idea that Conrad Browning, friend of the territorial governor, was also Kid Morgan, a wanted fugitive with a 10 grand bounty on his head in New Mexico. Blunt had kept his mouth shut about that, showing keen wisdom. The old-timer caught a moment alone with Conrad.
If you still want a half interest in Dos Caballos, kid, you don't have to pay for it. I'll give it to you, free and clear, for what you done.
I only suggested that in case it ever came down to having to fight Guthrie in court. It would have given me some legal standing. Now there's no need for it.
Nah, I don't reckon there is. I don't know what'll happen to the Rafter G now that Guthrie's gone loco, but I reckon the canyon's safe from now on.
If it ever turns out otherwise, you just get in touch with me through my lawyers.
I'll sure do it. Now, you better go tend to the rest of your business. I see somebody stirring around.
It was true, Conrad saw, as he limped toward the pine tree, using a borrowed Winchester as a makeshift crutch. Lace's eyes were open, and her head turned toward him as he approached. He tried to kneel beside her, but sat on the ground instead. Her hand moved on the blanket that covered her heavily bandaged body. He took hold of it, entwining his fingers with hers.
Kid? Conrad?
One and the same.
You're alive?
Yeah. So are you, in case you hadn't noticed.
But I got shot so many times.
4, to be exact. But the marshal who patched you up doesn't think any of the slugs hit anything too vital. That's the way he put it. You'll probably be laid up for weeks. Your bounty hunting career is over, more than likely. You'll live to see your daughter again.
He squeezed her hand, and weakly, she squeezed back.
What about Max?
Max leaned over and licked her face.
He's all right.
A few bullet scrapes, but he was lucky. He wouldn't leave your side all the time the marshal was patching you up.
Oh, thank God. I guess I won't have to hold you to that promise you made to look after my little girl.
Don't worry about that. You'll have plenty of money to take care of her yourself. I'll see to that.
Oh, damn it. You don't have to.
We'll talk about that later. Right now, just concentrate on recovering.
Conrad, what happened to Pike?
He's dead. He'll never bother you again.
You killed him.
He had it coming.
Damn right. Are you hurt?
A bullet through the leg. I'll be fine. In a couple weeks, I ought to be able to start for Santa Fe.
You're still going?
As you said, damn right.
He thought about the envelope in his pocket that contained a telegram from John Stafford. One of the marshals had delivered the grim message to him.
I got a job to finish there.
Three weeks later, Conrad Browning walked into the best hotel in Santa Fe with only a slight limp. He could have managed just fine without the heavy silver-headed walking stick he used, but he liked it. It would also make a fine close-quarters weapon in a pinch if he needed one. He wore a restrained dark brown suit and matching bowler. The suit was tailor-made, and the coat was cut especially so that it concealed the short-barreled .38 revolver Conrad wore in a cross-draw rig on his left hip. He had never used a cross-draw until recently, but over the past couple weeks, since he'd been back on his feet, he'd been practicing with it until he was fairly proficient. He wasn't as fast with it as he was with a standard draw, yet, but the instincts and reflexes he'd inherited from Frank Morgan had stood him in good stead. He was confident of his ability to handle himself in most gunfights using the .38, as long as they were at close range. The short-barreled gun had enough stopping power, but it wasn't much for accuracy. Conrad crossed the hotel lobby to the desk, confident no one was going to recognize him as Kid Morgan. The simplest thing would have been to go back to his life as Conrad permanently and let all memories of the kid fade away. The charges against him and the bounty that had been placed on his head would be moot. He couldn't do that. Not until he found out who was responsible for those wanted posters and why they had wanted to make his life a living hell. He gave the clerk his name, and the man gave him a toothy smile.
Of course, Mr. Browning. We weren't sure exactly when you would arrive, but we've been holding a suite for you. I'll have a boy take you right up. Your bags?
Conrad inclined his head toward the entrance.
Out front in the hack that brought me from the station.
Yes, sir. We'll take care of them.
I believe John Stafford is staying here as well?
That is correct, sir.
Let him know that I'm here, will you?
Of course. Right away.
A bellboy took Conrad up to the luxuriously furnished suite on the second floor. A bottle of cognac was already there waiting for him, as he had specified in his telegram. He had just poured two drinks when someone knocked on the door. He left the drinks sitting on a beautifully carved table as he went over to the door and put his hand on the butt of the pistol under his coat.
Who is it?
Stafford.
Conrad opened the door to let the lawyer in. He thought John J. Stafford bore a certain resemblance to his partner, Claudius Turnbuckle, and wondered if all lawyers just looked alike to him. The two men shook hands.
By God, it's good to see you, Conrad. I wasn't sure if I ever would again. How's the leg?
Healing fine. It doesn't give me much trouble except in damp weather. Then it aches a little.
Stafford stepped into the room and closed the door. Conrad stepped over to the table.
You want a drink?
Definitely.
The cognac was smooth and went down like liquid fire.
I don't suppose you're interested in making small talk.
Not at all. You've taken care of everything?
Of course. The coffin was shipped back to San Francisco. The last important thing Claudius did before he was attacked was to speak with a man named Charles Blanton, who's a special aide to Governor Otero.
What have you found out about Otero?
He seems to be an honest man, or at least as honest as any politician.
People say the same thing about lawyers.
And successful businessmen. None of us rate very highly as far as trust goes.
Is there any reason Otero would be holding a grudge against me or my family?
I haven't been able to uncover anything like that. Otero's been busy enough trying to hold together the fragile political coalition he formed when he was appointed governor. He doesn't seem to have had the time or the inclination to be carrying out a campaign of vengeance against you, Conrad.
And yet he refused to do anything about those wanted posters.
He might not have known about them. Claudius wasn't able to speak directly with the governor. This man, Blanton, kept him from meeting with Otero.
What do we know about Blanton?
An old friend and ally of the Otero family. He wasn't appointed to any official position, but serves as a special aide to the governor. He's paid out of Otero's personal funds, not the territorial budget.
And yet he has enough power to determine who sees the governor and who doesn't.
That's right.
I never heard of the man. Why would he conspire against me?
There's only one good reason I can think of. Money.
He was paid off?
It's certainly a possibility. Or perhaps he was blackmailed into acting against you. I'm still looking into that. But if it's true, the chances are that he's covered up his trail so well, I may not be able to find it.
What about the rest of it?
I have a sworn deposition from Miss Julian Fletcher explaining how you were mistakenly imprisoned because of your resemblance to the outlaw Benjamin Bledsoe. It also goes into detail about what happened after that, and how you're innocent of the charges against you. I expect that it will carry considerable weight, since Miss Fletcher is the daughter of the late warden of Hellgate Prison. I also have letters from the governor of Arizona Territory, from General Lew Wallace, and from President McKinley, all asking Governor Otero to issue a pardon absolving you of all charges.
President McKinley? I don't even know the president.
But he knows who you are.
With ammunition like that, it's going to be difficult for Otero to refuse, I would think. But it still doesn't answer the questions of who and why such a thing was done in the first place.
No, it doesn't. I hate to say it, Conrad, but you may never know.
Oh, I'll find out. There's a ball at the Palace of the Governors tonight, and Otero and Blanton will both be there. So will I. One of them is bound to have the answers I want.
You can't just burst in on something like that and start causing trouble. There'll be guards.
I have an invitation. It was sitting on the table next to the cognac when I got here.
But why...
Why invite me to the governor's ball? Someone must have heard that I was on my way to Santa Fe, and they're ready for a showdown.
What you're saying is that it's a trap.
Possibly.
Which you'll walk right into, just to get to the bottom of this?
Gladly.
You don't have to do this, Conrad. As one of your attorneys, I have to advise you to act in what I consider to be your best interests. Don't attend the ball. Leave this alone. Go back to Boston or San Francisco or wherever you'd like to live from now on, and go on with your life. Let this whole Kid Morgan business die.
I can't do that. Whoever is responsible for it has a definite grudge against me. He's not going to give it up that easily. I'll be in danger until I ferret out whoever it is, and so will everyone connected to me. I would think you'd understand that, John, after what happened to Claudius.
Damn it. I'm just as upset as you are about what happened to Claudius. He's my partner, and more than that, he's my friend. But we can't change things now.
I know as well as anyone that we can't change the past, but we can have an effect on the future, and I intend to.
Maybe you never should have started this blasted Kid Morgan business in the first place.
Maybe I shouldn't have. I was trying to, I don't know, put my life as Conrad Browning behind me, I suppose. Kid Morgan was just a useful fiction at first, but I found that it was easier being him. For a while, I even tried to change the way I thought and spoke to be more like what I thought a frontier gunman would be like. But in the end, I couldn't escape reality. I am who I am.
Not entirely. You've changed, Conrad. Claudius told me that you had, and now I see it for myself. I'm afraid there's a part of you that is Kid Morgan.
The long, shaded walk in front of the Palace of the Governors was thronged with people on that warm, pleasant evening, and more were walking across Santa Fe's main plaza toward it. Conrad's suit was black, with a matching vest. Like the outfit he had worn earlier, the clothes were cut to conceal the gun he carried. He wore a flat-crowned black hat and had an unlit cigarillo clenched between his teeth. His left hand gripped the silver-headed walking stick. A guard in a fancy blue uniform with a scarlet sash stood at the entrance to the palace. Conrad held up his invitation. The guard looked at it, handed it back.
Go right in, sir. Please enjoy the ball.
Thank you.
Conrad strolled into a lobby with several sets of large double doors that led into a ballroom. The palace was largely devoted to governmental offices, but the ballroom was used for official gatherings and soirees thrown by the territorial governor. An attractive young woman with a brilliant smile took Conrad's hat.
What about your cane, sir?
I'll hang on to it. I was injured not long ago, and I might need it.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
It's okay.
Holding the walking stick, he moved into the crowded ballroom. The cream of Santa Fe society was there, along with the rich, powerful, and influential from Albuquerque and elsewhere in the territory. Conrad recognized several men he knew from business dealings in the past, and they knew him as well. All of them had heard about Rebel's tragic death, so as he shook hands with them, he also graciously accepted the condolences they offered.
For a while, there was a rumor going around that you were dead too, Browning.
To paraphrase Mark Twain, the rumors of my death were greatly exaggerated.
Have you met the governor yet?
No, but I hope to soon.
The man Conrad was talking to took his arm.
Well, come on. I'll introduce you.
The man led him toward a group of well-dressed men engaged in an animated discussion. One of them looked too young and handsome to be a territorial governor, but he was the one Conrad's acquaintance approached.
Governor Otero, I'd like to introduce you to an old friend of mine, Conrad Browning.
Otero turned toward them, and so did a man who stood close beside him. The second man was older, with graying sandy hair and piercing eyes.
Mr. Browning?
Otero shook hands with Conrad.
Governor, your name is familiar to me for some reason.
Companies in which I have an interest have done a good deal of business in New Mexico territory. Or perhaps you've heard of me in some other connection.
No, I can't think of it right now, but I'm very glad to meet you anyway.
He turned to indicate his companion.
This is my good friend, Charles Blanton.
Conrad put out his hand.
Mr. Blanton?
He saw the suspicion and nervousness in Blanton's eyes as he shook hands with the man.
Browning, what brings you to Santa Fe?
A mystery. A mystery I have to solve.
That sounds intriguing. What sort of mystery, Mr. Browning?
Someone here seems to have a grudge of some sort against me. I want to find out who and why and see what I can do to resolve the problem.
That's terrible. Is there anything I can do to help?
Thank you, Governor. As a matter of fact, I might need your assistance in this matter. Could I call on you at your office, say, tomorrow, and explain everything to you?
Of course. I remember now where I've heard your name. You've been heavily involved with the railroads this part of the country, haven't you?
That's right.
Well, of course, I'll do anything I can to help.
Miguel, your schedule tomorrow is full.
I can find a few minutes for Mr. Browning. I look forward to it.
So do I, Governor.
The man who had introduced him had wandered off elsewhere in the crowd.
If you'll excuse me, I need to talk to someone right over there. Are you coming, Charles?
In a minute, Governor. I want another word with Mr. Browning here.
Of course.
Blanton moved closer to Conrad, and though they were surrounded by people, it was as if they were alone in the ballroom, considering the intensity of the look Blanton fastened on him.
No offense, Mr. Browning, but how is it that you're here tonight? I handled the guest list, and I don't recall sending you an invitation.
Conrad looked over and saw a sleekly handsome young man. He wore a charming smile, but his eyes were like chips of blue ice. Something about him was so familiar, Conrad felt a shock of recognition go through him. But the feeling was followed a second later by the certainty that he had never seen the man before in his life.
Roger, what are you doing here? This is the governor's ball. You can't...
Take my revenge right here in the middle of a crowd of such rich, powerful people? Is that what you mean, Charles? Of course I wouldn't do that.
You speak openly of revenge. I take that to mean you know who I am.
You're Conrad Browning, of course. Also known as the notorious gunfighter Kid Morgan. Whom no one had even ever heard of until a little over a year ago, by the way. Despite the fact that they're now writing dime novels about you.
Who the hell are you?
That's right. We've never actually met. Despite the fact that for a short time there, we were almost related.
You're a Tarleton.
Roger Tarleton. Pamela was my cousin. Until you murdered her.
I don't know what you think happened, but I didn't murder Pamela. I wasn't responsible for her death. You've got it all wrong, Tarleton.
Oh, I don't think so. I loved my cousin very much, Browning, ever since we were children. And not just as cousins, if you understand what I mean.
You son of a bitch.
That's why I couldn't allow her death to go unavenged. Someone has to pay the price for it, and that someone is you. If you hadn't betrayed her, she'd still be alive.
This is not the place for this, Roger.
I agree, it's not. That's why we're going out into the plaza, where we'll have room to settle things once and for all.
A gunfight?
That's right. Only I won't be taking on the infamous Kid Morgan. That would hardly be fair, now wouldn't it? I have several surrogates, if you will, to stand in for me.
Hired killers, you mean? You're going to have them murder me?
Call it what you will. I call it justice.
And why would I walk into a trap like that?
Because if you don't, Lace McCall won't live to see the sun come up tomorrow morning.
What are you talking about?
Unless they receive a telegram from me calling them off, several men in my employ will kill Lace McCall tonight.
And you won't send the telegram unless I walk out in the plaza and face your gunman.
That's right. If you do, then I'll let the slut live.
You've really found out a lot about me, haven't you?
A suitable revenge requires suitable preparation. How do you think I found out about your little misadventure in Hellgate Prison?
That gave you the idea of paying off Blanton to see that those phony reward posters were put out?
Oh, there's nothing phony about them. If someone had succeeded in killing you, the bounty would have been paid as promised.
But that didn't happen, so you decided to come out into the open to take your revenge.
That's right. I'm tired of waiting for Pamela's death to be avenged.
You know, those hired guns of yours might not kill me. I just might beat them. What happens then?
Why, I'll keep my part of the bargain, of course. I'll send word to my men in Phoenix to leave Miss McCall alone.
All right. You want a showdown? I'll give you a showdown.
This is not the time or place for this, Roger!
Stop it, Charles. You've been well paid for your part in this, so you have no room to complain. Besides, this is a matter of honor. The Spanish influence is still strong here in Santa Fe, isn't it? And the Spanish are a people who know the importance of a family's honor.
There's been enough talk. Let's get this over with.
You really do sound like a gunfighter, Browning. I agree. Let's go.
You're going to come along and watch?
I wouldn't miss it. I've dreamed of nothing else for months.
The two men turned and started toward the doors. Blanton hesitated for a second, looking torn, and then started after them. From the corner of his eye, Conrad noticed that Governor Otero had noticed them leaving and wore a curious frown on his face as he watched them walk out of the palace of the governors. There were still quite a few people in the plaza, although it wasn't nearly as crowded as it had been earlier. Most of the guests who were on their way to the ball had already gone in. Conrad spotted three men lounging near a fountain. One wore a suit much like his own, only not nearly as expensive, while the other two wore range clothes and long dusters. All three men straightened from their casual poses as they spotted Conrad and Tarleton coming toward them, with Blanton trailing behind. Grins of anticipation stretched across their faces. Conrad glanced to his left. The large carriage that had brought him from the hotel was parked nearby. He hadn't been the only passenger, and he signaled unobtrusively to the men waiting inside the vehicle. The door swung open, and John Stafford stepped out. People began taking notice of the three gunmen and the way they stood next to the fountain, obviously waiting for trouble. Men grabbed hold of their wives' arms and hustled them out of the way. It wouldn't be the first gunfight that had taken place there. Stafford turned back to the carriage to help another man step out of it. He held tightly to the second man's arm, supporting him. Conrad came to a stop, facing the three killers at a distance of about 20 feet. That range was too far for the short-barreled .38 to be very accurate.
Blanton, if you take a glance to your left, you might see something interesting.
Blanton was shocked at the sight of Claudius Turnbuckle, who stood next to Stafford. Turnbuckle was pale and drawn from his injury.
But you thought I was dead, didn't you, Blanton? You thought the assassin you hired to kill me had succeeded and that I was dead. Well, not hardly. Scurrilous skunk! Neither is your hired killer!
Conrad didn't dare take his eyes off the three gunmen, who were starting to look a little confused. The confrontation wasn't going exactly the way they had thought it would. Though he couldn't see it, Conrad knew what was happening. The chief of Santa Fe's police force was climbing out of the carriage and hauling the man Blanton had hired to kill Turnbuckle with him. A policeman had found Turnbuckle in time to save his life, and the lawyer had persuaded the authorities to put out the story that he and the would-be assassin were dead. He had gotten in touch with Stafford, who had hurried to Santa Fe, and they had hatched a plan to expose Blanton. Faced with prison, the knife-wielder had confessed that the governor's aide had hired him. Conrad had gone over all of it with his lawyer that afternoon. He had planned to have Stafford, Turnbuckle, and the police come into the ball and confront Blanton with the proof of his villainy, but the evening hadn't developed that way. In fact, this might be even better. The plaza was now deserted, except for the participants in the little drama.
We planned to use your henchman's testimony against you to force you to tell us who you were working with, Blanton. But now that's not necessary. We know who's really to blame for everything that's happened.
Looks like you'll be going to prison too, right along with Blanton, Roger.
Lines of horror and disbelief had etched themselves onto Tarleton's handsome face over the past few moments. His features twisted into an expression of insane hatred. Before Talton could say anything, Governor Otero walked out of the palace.
Charles, what's going on here?
Kill them! Kill them all!
His hired guns did their best to follow that order. Their hands stabbed toward their guns, but Conrad was faster. All three of the hired guns fell lifeless to the ground. Conrad spun around and saw Blanton fumbling for a pistol under his coat. Panicking, Blanton had fumbled the pistol from under his coat and was trying to bring it to bear. Conrad lashed out with the walking stick, bringing it down across Blanton's forearm. Bone snapped under the impact. Blanton dropped the gun. Roger Tarleton stared at Conrad in shocked surprise. His eyes widened as Conrad lifted the gun and pointed it at his face from a distance of a few feet.
Tell me who you're supposed to send that telegram to and what you're supposed to say. I'll give you 10 seconds and then I'm pulling this trigger.
You'll hang for murder. I'm unarmed, you can't shoot me.
I think I'll risk it.
No, you can't kill me. If you do, then that whore will die.
That lady is currently surrounded by a dozen or more deputy United States Marshals, sir, and is in no danger whatsoever. I don't know who you are, but you've seriously underestimated your enemies.
Claudius?
I'm sorry John and I didn't make you aware of that, Conrad. But to tell you the truth, there wasn't time. We just thought of it a short time ago and asked one of the detectives to send the wire.
The way somebody had been striking at people close to you, we figured it would be a good idea to get some protection for Miss McCall.
Thank you. It was an excellent idea.
He looped his thumb over the Colt's hammer and pulled it back.
Now I can just go ahead and shoot this mad dog.
Mr. Browning, please. I don't know what's going on here, but there's already been enough blood spilled tonight, hasn't there?
He let the Colt's hammer down gently and lowered the gun.
Yes, there's been enough blood spilled to last a lifetime. As for what's happened here, Blanton can explain all that. I'm sure he will to save his own skin as much as possible. I'm done.
Conrad turned away from Roger Tarleton.
I'm going home.
And where is that, Browning?
Conrad started to walk away. A policeman moved in and gripped Roger's arm.
You don't have anywhere to go. You've lost it all. Home? You don't have a home. You don't have anything. You just don't know it yet.
Tarleton and Blanton will be in prison for a good long time.
You won't have to worry about them anymore, my boy.
I'd feel better if Tarleton was dead. If you let a snake live, it can come back to bite you.
Well, not in this case. The other good news is that Miss McCall is fine. The men Tarleton hired to kill her never got within 100 yards of her before they were caught and arrested. It's a clean sweep.
Stafford reached under his coat and brought out a document.
Not only that, but here's the pardon Governor Otero signed this morning, absolving the man known as Kid Morgan from any and all charges relating to his escape from Hellgate Prison. The kid would be a free man, if, of course, he really existed.
Yes. No offense, Conrad, but I'm very glad that Mr. Kid Morgan has been permanently retired.
Stafford placed the pardon on the table next to his armchair.
There's just one more thing. The lawyer representing Roger Tarleton had this delivered to me this morning.
He brought an envelope from his pocket.
Evidently, it's a personal letter to you from Tarleton. You don't have to read it if you don't want to. I'm sure it's just more hateful venom spewed by that lunatic.
Conrad turned away from the window and stepped over to take the envelope.
No, I'll look at it.
He tore the envelope open, extracted the folded sheet of expensive notepaper inside, and opened it. The faintest hint of a familiar scent came from it. The blood seemed to turn to ice in Conrad's vein as he recognized the handwriting. It didn't belong to Roger Tarleton. Pamela Tarleton had written this letter.
Conrad, if you're reading this, it means I'm dead. I'm entrusting this letter to my beloved cousin Roger with instructions that he should make certain that you receive it, should my efforts to avenge my father's life and my own honor go unrewarded. There is something I want you to know. As I'm sure you recall, you and I were intimate before our marriage, Conrad. Committing those words to paper should shame me deeply, but I am beyond shame. What you did not know is that when you broke our engagement, I was with child by you. Yes, Conrad, you are a father. Not once, but twice. I gave birth to twins, your children. Not long after you married that other woman. They were healthy, happy infants. And now they are hidden away, where you will never find them. Somewhere in the vast frontier for which you deserted me. You are a father, Conrad, but you will never know your children, and they will never know you. And this is my final revenge on you.
Conrad's fingers clenched involuntarily on the paper, crumpling it.
My God, Conrad, what is it? You look like whatever is in that letter is the most horrifying thing you've ever read.
You were wrong a few minutes ago, Claudius.
Wrong? Wrong about what?
About Kid Morgan being retired.
Conrad turned to look at the coiled gun belt and holstered Colt that lay on a side table, alongside a Stetson he had bought earlier.
Kid Morgan is going to ride again.
The Loner, Book 7, The Bounty Killers, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2011, J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Tracy Oliveira, Michael Glenn, Alyssa Wilmoth, David Coyne, Tim Carlin, Gary Tells, Thomas Penny, Christopher Graybill, Dylan Lynch, Mort Shelby, Richard Rowan, Elizabeth Jernigan, Thomas Keegan, Joe Brack, Michael John Casey, Nanette Savard, Stephen Carpenter, and Terrence Aselford. Additional red shirts by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and book adaptation by Nathaniel Perry. The Loner theme was composed by Nathaniel Perry, with additional original music by Johann Detweiler and Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed The Loner, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter, as well as Cotton Pickens. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our action-pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another Graphic Audio title.
Name is Sardine.
Why were you trying to kill us, Sardine?
I wasn't aiming to kill you. All I wanted to do was hold you up for a while so as to keep you from getting home right away.
You wanted to keep us from getting home. Now, why would you want to do that?
To give Van Ark time to catch your woman. I've done my job. By now, we've done took her, and I reckon you'll pay plenty to get her back.
Snatch my woman? Are you talking about Sally?
Is that her name? Sally? Well, now, that's a right pretty name. Yes, sir, it is. But then I've heard she's a real pretty woman. So I expect you'll pay pretty near any amount of money we ask for just to get her back now, won't you?
What happens when you take Smoke Jensen's wife?
Come on, Jensen, I gotta tell Van Ark something. I can't go back to him and tell him you didn't say anything at all.
You don't have to worry about that.
What do you mean I don't have to worry about that?
I mean you don't have to worry about telling Van Ark anything. Because you aren't going back.
Damn! That is the same thing she said.
That's what Sally told you, isn't it?
Well, see here, I ain't gonna let you work on my mind like that. I damn sure I'm going back.
No, you aren't.
We got your wife, don't you understand that?
And I've got you.
Bear witness to Violence of the Mountain Man. Mountain Man number 36. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.